This is the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net. Face it, the holiday season is in full effect, and if you're unsure how to answer the question of what you're looking for this year, well, Kill Your Darlings Candle Company is here to help. Their candles for the wordsmiths of the world are the perfect gift to give or receive this holiday season. With candles like Kill Your Darlings, Writer's Block, Diverged in a Wood, and Dragon Tamer, they have extraordinary soy wax candles for writers and readers of all backgrounds. Not only that, but Kill Your Darlings Candle Company now has gift cards. Yes, never fear making the wrong candle choice for a friend, family member, or critique partner again. Or, better yet, don't worry about those same folks making the wrong gift choice for you. Simply tell them you'd like a Kill Your Darlings gift card and pick those candles out for yourself on the far side of the holiday season. To learn more and shop from their sustainably minded selection of candles and more now, visit kydcandleco.com. That's kydcandleco.com. Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. Candles for the wordsmiths of the world. Remember back in episode 95 when I mentioned why it's important we don't confuse people and platform? Well, today we're actually going to use this platform to focus on people, specifically in the vein of writing, a writer's life, the friendships that bud and blossom while on one's writerly journey, and why it's important to maintain that focus on people over platform. Hey there, I'm International Book Awards finalist and Rightscast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 97 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell Rightscast here on the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. This episode's guest is M.A. Hinkle, who longtime listeners might remember originally joined me back in episode 7 of this show to discuss the publication process. A lot has changed for both of us in the nearly 4 years since we last chatted on air, and we'll be discussing some of that in this episode, including the publication of our debut and subsequent novels, and what it's been like to navigate the world of publication with an independent press. So let's get right into it. Stay tuned after our conversation for updates on what you can expect next from the Rightscast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, M.A. Hinkle, for joining me for this conversation here on the Rightscast Network.
Yay!
Yay, indeed. Yeah, it's been a couple of years since we chatted on air for a podcast. Why don't we remind folks, or I'm going to ask you to remind folks, how it is, though, that we actually know each other from outside the world of writing first?
Okay, well, you happened to make one of my best friends from high school your wife, you know?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
You are a very lucky man in that way. And, like, you know, you're cool too, I guess. So you can have Lacey.
All right. I'm doing what I can here. I appreciate that. But yes, that is correct. You know, and I think a lot about how we actually, you know, had that connection outside the world of writing first. And I have very, like, seared into my brain memories of the night that Lacey and I came over to hang out with. I think Jordan was there that night too. We were hanging out with the two of you, and there was very much a, okay, so I hear you're a writer kind of conversation. And I know that this happens probably a lot. Listeners, you might know, you might be familiar with this, but when two writers who don't know each other encounter one another in the wild, there's this sort of like conversational dance that occurs where it's like you're trying to feel out how serious the other person is or isn't about what they do and like getting a feel for their work. And it was just so interesting to be part of that dynamic while knowing I was also basically being interviewed as Lacey's boyfriend at the time. And I just got to say, like, it was very, I felt like I was sweating bullets that whole night.
Yeah, you should have been because, okay, I'm going to be brutally honest with you.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, I've met so many dudes, like, I mean, I've been out of college for 6 years now, but, like, when I was in school, like, doing writing programs, I met so many dudes who look just like you and sound just like you, and it was just like, my dude, have you ever actually written a novel, and how much of the content is about the heroine's breasts? You know what I mean? So, to be honest, I was a little bit nervous. But then you told me the premise of the first empathy book, and I was just like, dude.
It was amazing because I remember one of the comments you made that night was you said something like, you know, I was really worried that you were going to be one of those guys who's writing a novel about a guy who's writing a novel. And that just will always stick with me because I was like, yeah, that's a person. That person exists. There's a lot of those persons out there. And I'm trying really hard to not be that guy, TMTM, you know?
And I should have been nicer to you, but like, sorry, Lacey had a lot of trash boyfriends before you. So we were like, you need to be good. You need to pass this test.
Well, and as fate would have it, actually, a lot of Lacey's ex-boyfriends listen to this show. So no, I'm just kidding. Of course they don't. I don't know who any of those people are. But the point remains, you know, we were able to chat about writing. I know that night we kind of made that commitment to get in touch by email, maybe share some of our writing back and forth. And I remember, you know, from that point onward, we were really in a position to, I feel, help each other kind of grow mm-hmm. as we figured out what it is that we were going to do with our manuscripts. Because at that time, neither of us were published and we were just trying to find our way. I mean, we're still all trying to find our way in the great wide world of publishing, but you know, Marianne, why don't you let listeners know here, the last time you were on the podcast, I think we recorded that in late 2016 or early 2017 for episode 7 of the mm-hmm. show. Can you bring listeners up to speed on what's changed for you in the world of publishing and writing since then?
A lot. Let's see. Okay. So, for one thing, when I was, when we talked last on the podcast, I was doing editing work, but like it was like one or two projects a year. And now that's my full-time job, which is pretty cool. Or at least it's full-time when we weren't in the middle of a, you know, devastating pandemic and people were stopped writing books because everyone was panicking. But now it's back up to that. So that's great. So my position in the actual industry has changed because now I'm more of an independent professional. The other thing is, obviously, now I have 3 books out with 9-Star Press. Gosh. And you got to read the first draft of Death of a Bachelor, which was a thing that...
It was a thing. It did exist.
It was a thing. It existed. And your feedback, as usual, was always very helpful. You've read all my books once I had a draft that was viable. And I always value your critique and stuff, and they would not be as, like, anywhere near as good as they are without your help. So, yeah, it's been a long, long couple of years.
It really has. It's actually strange to think about how it's been, you know, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it's been, and it feels as if it's been 10, which I guess mm-hmm. is, we're in that sort of, like, time dilation tunnel right now, and I'm sure it'll continue, but I'm hoping things get back to clicking with 1 second equaling 1 second sometime in the next few months. But, yeah, I do have to say it was really great to have the opportunity to read some of those early drafts, and I appreciate those kind words. And I have to say, you've been a real sort of guiding light for me with my own work. I know that you have also read, I think, almost every manuscript that I've written in the last 3 or 4 years. There are a couple that I haven't, you know, poked you about giving a read to yet, but it's always been really great to know that I can get from you the straight and narrow. And I think obviously that the skills that you already had back in 2016 that you've continued to develop as you have come into being a full-fledged, full-time, independent, you know, professional in this field has been really, I mean, it's been incredibly helpful. I can often sit down and write or be revising and think, well, what would M.A. Hinkle think about this little tidbit that I'm trying to pull off here? And it's been really good and refreshing to know that there are people out there, and this is for you listeners too, finding the right critique partners, finding people who are going to be beta readers who are going to give it to you exactly how it needs to be said. You know, there can't be any sort of, sometimes, you know, you need that pat on the back and that you're doing a really good job here, but you do need folks too. And you're one of these people, Marianne, who's just going to tell me how you feel about it. Sometimes you just need that. And it's really refreshing to have that. So you do have, of course, you know, these changes in your coming into full-time work here as a freelance publishing professional. And then you've also got these 3 books, Death of a Bachelor, Diamond Heart, and Weight of Living. And I believe, if memory serves, that you and I actually got our you know, acceptance for publication emails within like a week of each other. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I believe you got yours like right around Christmas, and then I got mine right before New Year's.
Yeah, it was the day after Christmas for me, yeah.
I should say the whole reason I sent my manuscript to Nine Star in the first place is because you interviewed someone on this podcast who published with Nine Star. And the reason I was interested in them was because, you know, 2016, 2017, even just 3 or 4 years ago, was a completely different landscape for queer people writing queer books. And I thought my books were just too weird. And now it's like a million books that like I could never have dreamed of have come out this year, this hell year alone. But Nine Star at the time was one of the only places that wasn't just, about cis white gay males, basically. It was the only place where I was like, hey, I can write a series like I have where it's one adult gay romance, one young adult gay romance, and then the other book I have out is a lesbian romance. And I don't have to restrict myself to writing about one kind of character. And now they have dozens of small presses that do the same thing. But at the time, that was kind of a revelation. So that was really exciting. And we had a really good time that December.
Yeah, that was definitely a good run of days there. And I'm certainly grateful for the Nine Star authors who joined me. I think the very first Nine Star author who came on the show might have been Mel Goh, who talked specifically about male-male romance and fan fiction in episode 19, maybe something like that. And hearing from Mel was great. That kind of opened the door to me finding more Nine Star authors on Twitter. And I think it was actually a conversation with Brianna Keenitz, the author of Off Pitch. We were chatting back and forth on Twitter. I asked her a couple of questions about Nine Star and thought, okay, yeah, we're going to send, the first manuscript, I forget about this. The first manuscript I sent to Nine Star wasn't even Imminent Dawn. It wasn't the first book in the Empathy series. It was Accounting for It All. And that was the one that opened the door to everything else. And I had kind of sent Accounting for It All off on a bit of a whim. And then, yeah, of course, the book that I wrote kind of just for fun and wasn't my big passion project was the one that got picked up first. But so it goes. So it's really wonderful to see how, again, this idea of community, you know, it's the opportunity to like talk to other writers and then listen to their experiences and then find these places. And then, as we're seeing, you know, there's been a growth in this queer publishing space and also this sort of personal growth that comes from that, because I know now that you're in a position to be, offering feedback as an editor to folks who are also in that publishing space. What does that journey feel like for you? I mean, what is that reward like to know that you're not only someone who is able to find your foothold in being published in this space, but now to also help other people do the same?
It feels really good, actually, just because, I'm trying to think of how to explain this without going into a bunch of personal details about my crappy ex-husband. When I was in school, I was getting my English degree and, I was very fulfilled creatively. And actually, I was working on getting my book published very seriously. I had a manuscript at the time that actually had the characters who would go into Death of a Bachelor, completely different story, but still. And I got very close to publication with that actually. But I just didn't have any support. And so for several years, I didn't write anything. I was just too depressed. And now I'm here making a living, not necessarily just on writing, obviously, because that's really difficult, especially if you're with a small press, but working with other authors using skills that I learned when I was in school, because I did writing tutoring for most of my college career. And the skills that I learned there were invaluable to the job that I do now, because, you know, I do about an even mix of proofreading and actual developmental editing. And the way that I learned to talk to people and to, you know, read quickly and absorb manuscripts, it feels really good to use that and know that this is my source of income. I'm not going to say that it's it was easy to get to this point and it took a lot of luck, but it was also the fact that like I worked really hard to get here and it feels really good that this is my job now.
Well, and that makes me think of a couple different things. You mentioned, you know, doing some proofreading, doing that developmental editing. I believe it was this morning or late last night, you had a really great tweet about the three branches of government being developmental editing, proofreading, and copy editing or something like that. I just had to say that was a nice tweet to see this morning as I was scrolling through everything else we have going on. So I appreciated that. But I also really enjoyed that you mentioned this journey is not, you know, an easy one. And I think a lot of writers know because of the amount of rejection we face and just how many writers there are out there and how few, relatively speaking, publishing opportunities there are, it always feels like the deck is sort of stacked against us. And I think it's important that though we encourage folks to keep their chin up, because as your journey is a testament to, you know, you can work hard and you can succeed and you can make, you know, a living of sorts doing writing and writing related work. But even once you're published, I mean, it's not always exactly what we might have thought it was going to be. And so if you wouldn't mind, I mean, can you contrast what it was like to go into, say, getting that first email from Nine Star and being, you know, presumably what your reaction was to getting that first offer of publication to how your views have changed about publishing now that you've had a few books out and you've gotten more enmeshed in the industry? How has that changed your opinion or your relationship or your how it is that you feel in general about the process?
Okay. Well, the first thing I'm going to say is not actually answering your question. It's connecting back to something you said earlier about how valuable it was to have this friendship that we've developed, where we can trust each other to look at our books and stuff. But the other thing that we talk about is you are the first person that I talk to if I get a new idea or if I need your opinion on something before. I have had to push back on my editor on a few things. And I have always run that stuff by you. And I want to say that, like, if you get traditionally published and you have an editor and you don't necessarily agree with something they say, you need to say something, but you should probably have a friend that you can talk to who will say, yes, you're totally in the right. You need to speak up about this. And I've done the same thing for you. So if you get traditionally published, you need a friend like that. Do not post your feelings publicly on any form of social media. Go to your DMs, Go to your email, like you keep your mouth shut. Okay. And only tell people you trust. But to talk about the publishing industry, let's see, when I first got that email, of course I was ecstatic to be published because it felt really validating. 2016 was such a hard year for me because in 2015 I got divorced. I moved back in with my parents. And I was jobless for a while, obviously. And so I was just trying to get my feet back under me. And the one thing that got me through was working on Death of a Bachelor. And so seeing that they took my book, which I had worked so hard on, had gone through like three major revisions, was super validating. And that feeling was just so nice after such a long time of nothing. And obviously the 2016 election, whew. Now I would say I was never the kind of person who was like, okay, this means that I've made it, because even if I had gotten an offer from a more traditional, like one of the big five, that's a very long involved process. And I was already aware of most of the steps because, like I said, when I was in college, I was looking into publication really seriously. And so I was like, okay, I got to temper my enthusiasm a little bit. And what I have to say now is I've never lost my love for the work and for seeing people enjoy my work and like their reactions to it. But at the same time, I've definitely become more disillusioned with the publishing industry. And this has nothing to do with Nine Star necessarily. It's the industry in general, just as I've become more involved with other writers on Twitter, like building that community, learning about other people's experiences, and getting more information about like the publishing industry from the inside instead of the outside. It's just been like, do you know how business works. like it's just amazing to me. And I have to admit that like I knew things were very complicated because in our first conversation on here, we had a long conversation about the actual like dollars and cents of publishing and how much money you get paid as an author. You know, and I've had to explain that to like lay people a couple of times when they ask me like, so how are your books are doing? And I'm like, my books are doing great, but I also didn't have very much like very high expectations because I already knew how much money this would make me basically when I right. made this decision to go with Nine Star. And then I have to sit there and explain the Byzantine math to them while their eyes glaze over. but, and so I knew that going in, but also getting more involved with the industry has shown me that like, as bad as I thought it was, it's worse. And the pandemic has only further exposed how broken the business model is. And to be honest, like, I don't want to sound like such a downer, but like I've been thinking so hard over this past year about like, what is my next path? Especially because like the next book that I had for Nine Star in my contemporary romance series, like I had to stop writing that for so long this year because I can't write about happy contemporary stuff when we literally can't go out to a coffee shop, you know? I don't know if that answers your question, but it's just, there's been a lot of things on my mind. And everything is very complicated.
Yeah, I think that it really does paint a picture for how, you know, the trials and tribulations continue, right? It's thinking about it in the context of if we're going to pull in a storytelling metaphor, mm-hmm. we're going through the story circle time and time again. You know, it's just a process that repeats itself at every stage of the journey. You are trying to get published. Okay, that's great. You achieve that success. You feel changed because you have, quote unquote, made it to a certain threshold. Well, guess what? Now you have to walk, you know, several brand new circles all the way from mm-hmm. the top to the bottom and back up again in the world of actually publishing. And it is, I would say that your experience sounds very similar to mine and similar to other authors who, you know, I have that sort of, we can really let our feelings show by email or we can really let those feelings show by DM. And I'm really glad that you did circle back to that because I had this conversation with someone who has been a writer. I mean, as long as I've known her, going on 10 plus, I mean, more than 10 years here. And we've been on, mm-hmm. in touch on and off over the course of that time. She just finished a manuscript and she's getting back out there trying to get on social media and query and all that jazz. And, you know, as our emails have gone back and forth, she's had plenty of them where, you know, she's expressing her frustration with the query process and the industry in general. And then she'll occasionally, there's one email in particular, she like apologized for complaining. And I'm like, no, this is absolutely the venue and the place to do it, because you are so right that we are going to encounter a lot of obstacles, both professionally and personally, and sometimes all at once. I mean, I think 2020 was the fingers crossed worst case scenario mm-hmm. for all of that kind of thing coming to a head here. But we have to have these people that we can go to in private, because the last thing that you want to do is take something you have worked so hard for and find yourself in a disagreement with your editor, because those things do happen. You and I both know that. Every published author out there knows that. And sometimes you do have to push back, but what you don't do is, unless you're, you know, being, of course, run through an abusive relationship of some kind, but you don't go straight to the public and like drag them because you disagree about changing a character's name. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you need to be in a space to convey your ideas to someone who you think also has a feel for what your vision for this manuscript was. Bounce that idea off of them, explain to them again why you think you might want to push back. And then, you know, you have it out back and forth there. That's the space to do that. But, you know, I'm losing track of my own thread here because there really is so much to address. But mm-hmm. I think the takeaway that I want listeners to have here is just, you know, we got to make sure that we are, as winter approaches, we have to make sure that we are bundled up. And the deeper that you walk into the tundra, the colder it gets. But just know that there are always more jackets there and more people to walk with you. You just have to, mm-hmm. you know, band together kind of thing. That's the metaphor I'm going to settle on right now, I guess.
Okay. And can I actually like tell you about something? I've already told you about this, but I can tell your podcast listeners about something that happened to me recently that I think really explains a little bit about my shift in mindset. And also, I think demonstrates some of the resilience that you need to have in this job, basically. Because, okay, you know that I was working on a book that I wanted to submit to Carina Press, which is a great publisher. I love basically everything they do. And so they had a call for proposals back in, I guess it must have been 2019, because I finished the book this year. God, it feels like 20 years ago. So I wrote this book, and when I did the proposal, I had to write the first 7,000 words or so, I believe it was, and a full synopsis and, you know, the query letter and stuff. So I did that because I figured it would be good practice. I didn't really have a book that I was married to, so I picked an old story idea and fleshed it out that I had written an outline for as kind of an exercise but never did anything with. So I took that book, I wrote the first 7,000 words, I wrote a synopsis following, you know, a romance beat sheet, because I've written books that have romance in them, but technically I've never written a capital R romance. Like, my books are more like contemporary fiction. And that's a lot of the response I get from romance readers, especially. So I wrote the synopsis, and they were like, oh, great. We love your first, you know, 20 pages or whatever. Go ahead and take as long as you need to write the book. So I actually got most of the draft finished long before anything bad happened in 2020. So that wasn't the problem. It was just, as I was going through it, the synopsis didn't change that much, but the tone of the book was totally different. I was like writing this, and like literally on Twitter, I posted like, how much horror can you put in a romance before it stops being a romance? You know, and I got a positive response from people, but it's not really, I had this feeling as I was working on it. I'm like, I don't really know if this is going to work out. And I don't necessarily know if I want to put this book back in the box, basically. But like, I don't want to say that sounding, critical, but romance has a formula and you need to hit the beats that readers expect or else it's not a romance. Right. And my book did have a happy ever after and all that stuff, and kissing and things like that. But at the same time, when I was writing this, I was like, I feel like this is too weird. I don't know if they're going to do it, but I'll just go ahead, write the book. And I really enjoyed it. And I was like, I'll send it off and then I'll see what happens after it comes back. Like, there's no harm, no foul, basically. And so I sent it into them, and, you know, they turned down the book, but I did get a positive thing that was like, please send us something else. Like, this is not a good fit for Carina Press, you know, that kind of letter. So it wasn't a bad rejection by any means, but it was still a rejection. And so I like sat on my feelings for a second and tried to figure out like, how did I feel about this? And the answer was like, I really would have liked to be with Carina Press because I love their output and they're, you know, really high profile. They're a Harlequin imprint. So any book published to them is automatically going to get a lot of eyeballs. But at the same time, I would have had to change my book to fit something that it wasn't. And like, this book was not a good fit for it. And like, I thought about it and it's like, you know, this is a good thing. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do with Rites of Spring right now. But I don't have to make it something that it's not. And so as much as the rejection stung, it wasn't necessarily a bad thing. And that's the way I feel like you have to treat all stuff in publishing, is like, sit down, think about it, and like, try to find the bright side and what this means for what you're going to do next, versus, you know, immediately like, you know, running out on the moors and sobbing dramatically. It's like, there will be setbacks in this career no matter what you do. And you just have to figure out, what does this mean for my next step? Because you as an author are the only person who's going to be number one looking out for yourself. You know, your editor, your agent, if you get one, those people will be in your corner, but they have their own interests that they're going to be taking care of first. You are the only person who's going to put yourself first, and you have to decide, what does this mean for me? How do I feel about this? And what do I do next before you get too in the weeds of publishing? I guess, if that makes any sense. I feel like, you know, that's my story.
Dandelion Web Marketing. Yes, we're talking again about Dandelion Web Marketing, who sponsors this episode and all of the RightsCast Network. But more important than that, Dandelion Web Marketing is out there helping writers and authors thrive online. If you're an author or a writer, which you are, you're listening to this podcast, and if you need help getting your platform up and running fast, Dandelion Web Marketing's Author Quick Start packages are the place to start. These Author Quick Start packages take the headache out of creating your author website, and they can help you with that all-important analytics tracking and more. So become your best you online today with Dandelion Web Marketing by visiting dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. Yeah, that's resonating really strongly for me. I'm thinking a lot about this idea of being picky about the shots that you take, and then recognizing that just because you see an opening and you think you can get a shot on target, you know, you don't always have to try and put the ball in the back of the net, which is strange. And it's very counterintuitive, particularly when we ground that in a sports analogy. But everything you said there is really, it's hitting me intensely, because I think a lot about how there was such a rapid fire succession of opportunities for me to publish. You know, we went from Accounting for It All to Imminent Dawn to Morning Dove in 7 months, 3 books in 7 months. And I was kind of sold initially on this idea that, you know, if you can get these books out in quick succession, you're building a groundswell of news and hype, and you're going to be in an opportunity to create this really nice audience that's going to stick with you, because they're going to trust that you are going to be in a position to be high output and that there's always going to be something for them to grab onto. And as someone who had, like many writers out there, have had this experience, you just want to be published so bad that it can only seem like a good thing, you know, to get more publications going and to get them so quickly. And in retrospect, 100% the wrong choice to pursue that particular model. I had convinced myself that to turn anything down or to pump the brakes or to ask, you know, for an opportunity to sort of delay timelines would have only hurt me, when in reality, what I needed was an opportunity to do a book launch, to not just launch a book, but then to try to see sustained growth of its readership and its book sales, so that I could learn from that process and then be in a position to apply that to future books. But when you have 3 books come out that quickly, there's no opportunity to do any sort of post-mortem until you're on the far side of that 3rd book. And by then, those 3 books are out. Like, there's, then what? You've exhausted yourself and you've put yourself in a position to feel at sometimes a bit, you know, lost at sea. And then you find yourself in a position like I am. And I feel good now about where I am, because I've done a lot of this soul searching. But now I'm thinking about some of the things you've mentioned. It's, where do I see myself going from here? What are the books I actually want to write? What are my priorities going to be as an author? And more importantly, just as a person. And now that I have sort of answered those questions for myself, you know what? I don't have a book slated for publication, but this is the happiest I have been writing probably since 2017 or 2018, and that's pre-publication. And I think that that's really saying something. So to your point, yeah, you have to have yourself in mind first, because you're the only person who at the end of the day is going to know who you are, what you want to write, and what you want to do. And you have to be in a position to advocate for yourself. And sometimes that self-advocacy means being picky. Sometimes it means really defending yourself. And sometimes it means saying no to opportunities that come up, as counterintuitive as that may seem.
Oh my God, yes. And if I can go off on another kind of personal tangent that I think is relevant to this discussion, about separating your self-worth from your production as an author, because there is, like, you know, in academia, they have a saying, publish or perish. And in regular writing, it is almost the same thing. Like, it's like, if you don't have the second book already done and, you know, signed with the press the second your first book comes out, you might as well be dead to us. I've seen a lot of people reevaluate that mindset in 2020 because of the state of the world, where they just couldn't write. And the thing is, I had to go through that process earlier than everyone else. Not to like humble brag or I want to sound like a jerk. It's just that I got really sick in 2018, and that because okay, let's see, I got the offer for Death of a Bachelor in 2017, right in December. And so the next thing I did was immediately sit down and start writing Diamond Heart, which is a book I wanted to write anyway. And I knew what happened because the Diamond Heart and Death of a Bachelor are linked. So it was not difficult to write that. I wrote it in about 3 months. It was done. It basically didn't change that much. And so my next plan was to immediately sit down and write book number 3. So that way, once Diamond Heart was through production, I would have book number 3 already in. I'd be ahead, blah, blah, blah. I had all these plans. I was so ready. Like in the process of writing Diamond Heart, I basically outlined the whole Cherrywood Grove series. And I was like, okay, I can do this. I can do that. I'm so ready to go. Like, I am on this. And I was basically doing the exact same thing you did, where it's like, I wanted to pop out those books, but then I got sick and I physically couldn't. You know, I was just in such a bad state for most of 2018. And I was still trying to force myself to write 2,000 words a day, but it was all trash because I was not taking care of myself. And I had to step back and reevaluate my own state of mind about who I was as a person if I couldn't sit down and produce. Because, you know, when I was in college, like I had 3 jobs, you know, going to school full time. And I was writing, you know, 2,000 words a day whenever I could do it. And I'm not saying that I kept any of those novels, but I was doing it. And so I very much based my self-worth around that idea of like, I can do all of my job stuff and then I can also write. Anyone who doesn't is not trying hard enough, which is mean. It's a very mean mindset, especially to yourself. And 2020 is the worst year ever, but I feel like it has forced people to look at this toxic productivity mindset and say, no. I am not the things that I make. I am worth something, even if I am not producing. And you have to really hold that in your heart and focus on that, because there's going to be so much stuff in this world that is going to try to rob that from you. Like, is going to try to make you feel like crap, because every time you turn around, there's a new debut thing or someone else is signed with an agent. And it's like, you really have to work on your holding who you are in your own heart besides your writing career. That is like the number one thing that I've learned. And, you know, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with myself going forward because the world is so uncertain, but I am going to keep that, like, no matter what I write, no matter where I publish with, no matter if, you know, if I get an agent or whatever, I am not my writing. Like, whatever I end up doing, I am worth enough. Like, I don't have to prove myself, basically.
And that's all a really important lesson. And it's one that I had to learn the hard way. And I think it's one mm-hmm. that a lot of writers find themselves having to learn the hard way, because we get this idea in our head that, you know, you try so hard for something for so long and you just desperately want to be able to say, you know, I am an author or mm-hmm. I am a published author. And it feels so good to be able to finally say that it becomes your identity. And that's where that great trap is. And that's where you can find yourself saying yes to opportunities that maybe aren't the best fit, or you find yourself ignoring that sort of gut feeling and just going forward because we have this idea in our head that, okay, well, if I don't publish, surely I shall perish. And that is not the case. And I'll give an example of this. Actually, it was one I was thinking of as you were speaking there. I think about When the Stars Conspire, right? This is a manuscript that's gone through a bajillion drafts, like some very deep revisions. I know you've seen quite a few different versions of that manuscript. And I remember
I just want to say before you get any further, it's a good book and it deserves good things. You know, I've like that book has been through so many drafts and it still is good.
Okay. I'm glad you think so. I appreciate that, because the journey that it's been on, you know, has been one of very deep revision back and forth. But in late, I want to say 2018, mm-hmm. it was, and it was another, I swear, I can't make this up. It was like the day after Christmas, maybe 2 days after Christmas in 2018. So I'm a year removed from my first offer from Nine Star. I got an offer for that manuscript from another independent press. And there I was, you know, standing there. Yeah. I think Lacey and I were playing like Game of Thrones Risk, which was very a la mode at the time. And I happened to look at my phone and I get this email. And I just, there was this sense of, you know, this is it. Like, this is what it feels like to be in a position where like your work is wanted. And it was so validating as a person. And they were, you know, about to go on holiday for a week or something like that. And I said, I emailed them and said, yeah, please send the contract over. I'd love an opportunity to review it. And I got it about a week later. And I opened it up first thing I saw in the morning, because they had sent it late at night. And rather than write that morning, I was like, I'm going to review this contract. I'm so fired up. This is going to be awesome to be getting published with another new press. Just helps diversify and find new audiences. And I read that contract and it was a horror show. I mean, it became apparent mm-hmm. as I read that contract that there was some very shady stuff going on at that press, you know, as it pertains to the expectations they have for the marketing work that you do and the sort of control that they wanted to assert over your platform, not to mention the royalty rates were completely mm-hmm. unacceptable for an independent press space. And there were some other clauses in there too that I can't remember right now. I've got a blog post about it somewhere, that it was just really a bad situation. And I thought to myself, okay, so what are you going to do? You were really excited and now you have this contract in front of you. Well, I turned it down. It was the right choice. It was not going to be a good situation. I did not want to get in a mm-hmm. bad business relationship with someone that I couldn't trust from the start. And then what did I do with that manuscript? Well, I was just kind of devastated. I set it aside, and it was strange to know that I had kind of done it to myself because I had turned down this contract. But okay, 2019 comes. I touched that manuscript a couple times. I give it some of those deeper revisions. Late 2019, I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe 2020, we're going to give this manuscript a shot. We're going to see what we can get out of it. And so I start querying again, 2020 with a new version of it. And I get the greatest rejection I've gotten all time for any manuscript ever, because I was going direct to agents this time with this version. I had made it a little more upmarket. It felt like it was occupying a slightly different space than the previous iterations of it were. And I heard from my dream agent some incredible feedback, said that she absolutely loved the writing. It was exactly the kind of voice that she wants to see. And she loved the characters. She loved the setting. She just didn't feel like she was connecting with the tension, but then said, I want to see more of your work in the future. And when you hear that from someone like Carina mm-hmm. Press, or when you hear that from an agent, you know it's true. They're not going to lie to you about wanting to see more of your work, because if they don't want your stuff hitting their inbox, they're not going to extend the invite. But knowing in retrospect mm-hmm. that saying no to a publisher that I didn't feel was the right fit, and being able to say no and sort of getting over this idea that it's publish or perish, giving myself space to rewrite and embrace the actual passion I have, which is for the writing itself, opened this door that even if it was a rejection, now I can say, I have another manuscript that's going to be ready to go in 2021, maybe a second one, and both of them are going to go to that agent, and I'm going to have, you know, a foot in that door. And that means a lot. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, but that means a lot. And that's just a demonstration of how trusting your gut, putting yourself first, and sometimes knowing it's okay to say no can really make a huge difference.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Okay. If to touch on something that I've learned in my career as an editor versus being an author, you know, I work with people who self-publish. And so there is very much the publisher perish mindset, because it's literally, if you don't put out a book every month, your rating on Amazon drops, you know, because they reward you for turning out books, basically. I don't want to sound negative about it. Like, all of these books that I work with are very good. And, these people are like legitimately amazing in how fast they create words, because they're making enough money where they don't have to, you know, worry about other things that would keep them from writing good books, basically. So, but 2020 has been such a terrible year for everyone. Like, I have had clients, I started working full-time as an editor in 2019. So I've had clients who I've worked with since the beginning of my career as an editor, and they put out a book every month, you know, 50 to 80,000 words. They're all good. I work with them, and they just dropped off the map in 2020 to the point where I was legitimately worried, like, oh my God, did some of my clients get COVID? And no, everyone has been fine. It's just been so terrible. And, you know, I'm talking to these people and they're like, they come to me with their manuscript and they're like, I'm sorry, it's been so long, or I'm sorry, I haven't answered your emails promptly. And I'm just like, and they're talking about how it's been so hard for them to write, and they feel they're getting back into that mindset of my work is my worth. And they feel so bad about not being able to produce, not being able to write the way they used to. And I'm just sitting here like, you know, last year we could walk outside without wondering if we could catch a virus that would literally kill us. You know, you cannot compare yourself to who you were in 2019. And I'm just sitting there like, no, you send it to me when you've got it. You work with me as much as you can. Like, I will do whatever I can to make your life easy, because I'm not the one who's got like kids and a husband and trying to figure out, like, is everyone I love literally going to die? You know, and it's just been such an experience to see that from the other side, where I'm the person who's able to say, like, no, you need to stop being so hard on yourself and just do what you can do. Because if you keep punishing yourself for not being able to produce, it's just going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so that's the other thing that has really helped me change my mindset, is seeing, like, we don't always talk about this as authors, but everyone is going through the exact same thing. It doesn't matter how many glowing social media things they post, or, you know, whatever book they come out with, every person is going through the same process. They're just not as open about it as other people might be.
If you've visited my author website or social media profiles before, you've likely noticed a number of high-quality images of my books in quite a few different picturesque settings. And this might have had you wondering, well, who did I pay to take those photos? How much did it cost, and was it possibly worth it? Well, I'm going to let you in on a secret. I did not pay a photographer for those photos, and I was able to create them in minutes and for far less than you might think. How did I make those photos? Well, I used Mockup Shots. Mockup Shots is an online software by Adazing that lets you upload your book covers to create high-quality images of your books for marketing and publicity purposes. Using Mockup Shots has helped me further develop my brand and sharpened my web presence, whether that be on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or my author site. Not only that, but Mockup Shots has saved me tons of time. Whenever I need a stunning new photo of one of my books, I can simply hop into Mockup Shots and generate one in minutes. So if this sounds awesome, well, I can assure you it is. And right now, you can get a deal available to our RightsCast Network listeners by visiting bit.ly/coverphotosdeal to check out Mockup Shots, get a couple of sample images of your own, and hey, see if the software is right for you. Again, the place to visit is bit.ly/coverphotosdeal. And I think it's important that we talk about this in the context not only of the actual writing and publishing itself, but also things like platform, right? Because one of the things that has kept me going with the RightsCast Network for as long as I have is this is the biggest plank in my author platform, right? And I've often said to myself, well, what are you, or who are you, or who are you reaching if you don't do these podcasts? And that has kept me, it's been the source of a lot of joy. It's also been the source of a lot of stress to try and keep up with this. And it's really interesting to now be in a position where over the course of the last couple of months, as I have known privately that I would be winding down the podcast network, and with the announcement, you know, having gone up on Friday, November 6th, that our final episode will debut on December 11th. Ever since I have kind of embraced that sense of finality, I'm finding myself going, it really is going to be okay. Like, we have to give ourselves permission to focus on what's important. And what's really important at the end of the day is caring for ourselves and caring for the people nearest us, and having the opportunity to do things like not be super stressed out and send those nice emails to your writing friends or just to your regular friends and have those conversations back mm-hmm. and forth that are frank and open and honest. And when your every minute of the day is filled with this need to produce or with actual production or with guilt for not having produced, you can't have a conversation like the one that you and I are having today, I think. If we were to have had this conversation 6 or 7 months ago, I mean, even right as COVID was starting to hit, you would have heard me doing my radio voice a lot more. I would have been very like formal about the questions and everything that I had set up. And it's like, no, that's not what this is. And it's not what it should be. It's got to be about our ability mm-hmm. to have a good conversation here that's open, that's honest, that gives listeners something to really think about, but also that's going to feel good for us. A platform is great, but platform's not people. I'm going to be saying that a lot in these final episodes here. People are people. It's corporations aren't people, platforms not people, right? So we just have to be putting ourselves in a position to focus on us and then to focus on our work and know that they're not the same thing. And I think that's really what my takeaways from this conversation are going to be by the time we bring it to a close here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really agree with that. It's like, I feel like I'm not a spiritual person, but I'm a person who tries to find the bright side in things that happen, because otherwise, what are you going to do except lay on the floor and cry? And 2020 has been such an awful year with basically no upside, but I do feel like I'm witnessing a lot of people paring back the nonsense in their own life and saying, you know, no, I'm going to choose to advocate for myself. I'm going to choose to, you know, put myself first in a really positive way, you know, not a selfish way. And I'm going to choose to focus on what actually makes me happy instead of what people say I should be doing. Like, I have never heard you just chill. And it's just really good to hear you so relaxed and like having a normal conversation with me as friends. You know, it's like, because the thing is, you know, and again, this happened to me before 2020 because I was sick. So I couldn't go out and meet with people, and it was hard for me to like hold a conversation. And so I already had to do a lot of that. Like, you got to learn how to connect with people differently, and actually choose to prioritize what pleases you. And I think that since you made the decision to wind down this podcast and just focus more on your own writing, like, you have produced so much more stuff that you're proud of. You sound so much more positive in our email conversations. There's way less freaking out. And, you know, it's just part of being an author is just being like, there's constantly this voice in the back of your head that's going, ah, and you have to like, just turn the dial down and be like, nope, nope, nope. I'm not going to listen to that frantic energy. I'm going to do what I do best. And if I just keep working at it and choosing to kind of like move with the way that the current is going, instead of trying to go upstream forcibly, things will come. That's the mindset that you've been shifting to. And that's the mindset that I've been shifting to. And that's really helped me so much.
Yeah. You have to just kind of look at the world and appreciate that there is this sort of symphony of chaos happening around you, but then filter out the frequencies or filter out the noise that isn't going to be as meaningful to your mission. And I think that that's ultimately what it's come down to for me is what's my mission? My mission fundamentally is just to mm-hmm. be happy as a person. And as an extension of that, writing makes me happy as a person. Everything else is to some extent noise, even if there are days where I love it. I love doing this podcast. Having this conversation with you and some of the other conversations I've had more recently where I've been able to speak more freely and openly, the best episodes that I've had. And that says to me that this is something that, you know, I enjoy, but I can't enjoy it if I'm spending 10 to 15 hours a week doing it on top of trying to write and run a candle company and have a part-time day job. And, you know, when I was doing developmental editing services, I mean, my God, to think that I was doing all of that is such, it's like poison to me to think about that. And I wasn't well, mm-hmm. I wasn't well for many years. And now being in a position to go, oh, you can just write and it feels great. it really feels great. And like platform, all that jazz, you know what? Just go out there and, you know, be deliberate about what you want to do, but just kind of be yourself. I mean, if you're writing stuff where you as a person or elements of you and who you are show up in your writing, and then you just are kind of being that same person, tussling with those same ideas in a public space or even a private space by email with people. And when you respond to newsletters that you get from folks and let them know it really resonated with you. I mean, that goes way farther than having a podcast network with a reach of, you know, tens of thousands over the course of a given year. I can say that personally 100% to be the case. So I don't know. I'm trying to find a way to like bring it, to put a nice bow on this, but I feel like we're really, it just feels good to be able to say all this, you know, it just feels good to put it out there.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Talking about platform, like I haven't been using Twitter nearly as much this year because obviously it turned into like a total hellscape, even though it is already a hellscape. But something I will say is that the people I enjoy to see on Twitter or any other social media platform are the authors who are just talking about whatever they want. Like I just recently read Olivia Dodd's Spoiler Alert, which was a really great book. And it was funny reading the book after being following her on Twitter, because I could see the same things that she talks about on Twitter, like that bring her legitimate joy, were also in the book. And that's the kind of stuff that people want to see from you. They don't want the manufactured persona. You know, and you know, you got to take all the writing advice. Like, who am I to talk about this crap anyway? But like, you know, everybody's got an agenda. So you just kind of have to do what feels right for you, no matter what, because, you know, gosh, what is that quote from The Princess Bride? Life is pain. Anyone who tells you anything different is selling something. And I feel like the selling something part is really important in this day and age, because it's like, you got to ask, like, whenever someone gives writing advice, it's like, well, what's your angle? You know, what are you trying to do? And are you really that successful at it either? You know, and at the end of the day, you just have to go back to your own internal compass and be like, does this spark joy?
Right.
Is that still
that's
a meme?
That's still a thing. I'm pretty sure it's an old meme, but it checks out. We're getting meta now. We're getting very meta with our memes here. But that is really true. And I just think a lot about trying to bring it back to that idea of what sparks joy. You know, what sparks joy for me is me sitting here and saying, this is the RightsCast Network. It's not, this is the RightsCast Network. It's like, what is that? What was I doing? What was I trying to sell? And you're spot on too about this idea of, you know, folks who have something they're peddling, or they get this idea that like, what is platform? And then what they try to do is a copy of someone else's copy of a copy of a thing. And it's all writing advice. And just sometimes it's just wrong. Sometimes it's just wrong. And people get these great ideas. It's the stuff that, man, this could go sideways real hard. So I'm going to have to figure out where I want to temper this. But it's the thing that folks will tweet about that's like writing related, or it's publishing related. And it is the opinion that affirms folks' desire to do as little work as possible and still find success. And you see it go up, and it's the most interacted with stuff. And people go, yeah, that's what I always thought. I can't believe everyone is saying, you know, whatever the other thing is. And it's like, yeah, but what you want, my friends who are engaging with this content, you're looking not for writing advice, you're looking for writing affirmation. And they're different things. And sometimes advice is going to run contrary to what it is that, you know, it's going to take work. I'm sorry. It's going to take work. And you're going to have to make hard choices, but you get better at making hard choices the more of them you make. And if you just enable yourself to always surrender or take the easy path and insist that, you know, you are above revisions or editing or whatever the case is, the sooner you can accept that it's going to be tough, but you can make it work, and you embrace that like wholeheartedly as a person, you know, at your core, the better positioned you're going to be, so you don't get swept up in the sort of the nonsense and the idle chit chat and the just general inanity that is floating around the Twitter sphere so often.
You know, and it's like, even the people who look like they're super successful are still scrambling behind the scenes. You know, it's part of their job to look like they're not. So you have to ask yourself, like, you know, is this who is speaking in this thing? Are they really a person of authority, or are they, you know, as confused as I am? Because the answer is they're as confused as you are. And it just feels really good to like assert things on Twitter and have a bunch of people agree with you. So it's like, you gotta remember that.
Yeah. It's a platform that incentivizes like faux expertise and outrage. And so if you can combine the two, which some people are really good at, I mean, that's how these people end up with tens of thousands of followers and like these sort of like cult like, you know, folks like hanging on their every word. And sometimes I see what comes out of these accounts and I'm just like, golly, and look at me. Sure. Come at me. Say I'm jealous and whatever else. Like, no, man, that's not what it's about. It's really not about, the problem is that it's not about the numbers, and it's come into a numbers thing. It's like the economy. It's like the economy of social capital. And that's not what this is. Are you kidding me? We're trying to write books, man. Like, that is not what this is about.
Mm-hmm. And okay, to get to like more brass tacks versus feely feels, even though this job is all about the feely feels, the thing is, you always have to ask yourself, okay, let's actually look at the numbers. How many books has this person sold? What are they doing? Because like, when I got sick, I basically had to pivot from doing, you know, writing work to like paying work, because I had to figure out a way that was more adaptable for me to accommodate being sick. And so now it's like, I have that source of income that's taking away some of the anxiety. And so it helped me look like, what is this person selling to me? How successful are they really? And are they living a lifestyle that I want to necessarily emulate? Because, you know, the romance authors that I work with, like I said, they're pumping out books every month. And it's like, do I necessarily want to follow that? Because if you do that, you can make a very good amount of money, you know, every month, enough to replace like a 9-to-5 job at a call center or whatever. Or more if you're really successful and like put a lot of work into it. But you can make a comfortable living just doing that. And I had to ask myself, like, do I want to be that kind of person, or do I want to, you know, do weirder stuff that's not necessarily as commercial and as easy to sell? And the answer is, there's nothing wrong with either thing. It's just something I'm still thinking about. And but they're successful, so I need to pay attention to them versus some rando guy on Twitter who's like, that is dead. You know, and I'm just sitting there like, as an editor, like, no, yeah. No.
Yeah, it's really tough. And I'm glad that you were able to make that a little more concrete, even giving that example of said is dead, because I know that I have gotten... I entered this stage where I was really curating my Twitter feed and just completely muting or hiding or unfollowing or, you know, censoring certain words. Cause it's just like, I do enough clenching of my jaw in a given day. Like, I don't need this like Twitter bro who showed up and is doing God, please save me. # writer's lift, where it's just people following people to pump up their follower counts and then getting snippy when folks unfollow. And it's like, you have tens of thousands of followers. Did you really just send out a tweet about how you lost 8 people today? What? How petty can you possibly be, and how far away are you? And I'm so off the rails right now. I recognize that. I'm just deep down the web of disillusionment, or the hole of disillusionment. But, you know, those concrete examples really do, they make it stand out. And then folks know what it is I'm actually getting at as I sit here and rub my forehead, searching desperately for a way back out of this hole, you know?
Well, okay. If I want to get in the weeds for a second, something I saw one going around a few days ago that really ticked me off, because it was like, what was it? It was something like, read your manuscript out loud and take each word out of a sentence and see if the sentence is still fine. And if it is, then you know you can get rid of it. And I'm just sitting there like, I would literally kill you if you told me to do that. Like, because like as a editor, there is some stock advice that I give people. But at the same time, okay, usually I do tell people to like get rid of the word that and just, because they're very easy to overuse and they're often just filler, right? See, there, I did it right there. Because it's part of the way we talk in English. But right now I'm working on a book where the tone that the author is going for is legitimately enhanced by using a more passive sentence structure. So ordinarily, this is the kind of thing I would root out of a manuscript, but this is their voice, you know? So it's that kind of advice always gets to me, because it's like, it is never a pat one and done thing. And anyone who says like, this is the rule, they are wrong and you shouldn't trust them. And that's my other big thing, is it's like, if you're working as an author, like you have to ask yourself, do I actually trust this advice, or are they going completely contrary to what I'm trying to do? And you have to know that, and know when you're just being prickly about, you know, being edited versus, no, this is what I'm trying to do and I want to defend it, please.
Yeah, I throw anyone who is a hardliner on the rules and who believes there's no exception to them, throw them in a river. that is 100%, you know, my approach. I've been getting, collecting some query feedback, for the manuscript that I'm looking to query in 2021, got a lot of really wonderful feedback from folks who are helping me. You know, they're really pointing out some things that even I had overlooked. And I had someone who gave me, you know, some good advice, but they also had a couple of things that they went super hard on, and they were very much about the things that you often hear about a query, particularly as it pertains to maybe something like, I'll just pick one, trying not to like pick the exact thing this person recommended, but the idea of comp titles, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, pick something, you really got to pick something from the last 5 years. And it's like, yeah, I know that like in general, we want to do that. And that's why I have chosen 3 books for this one. And 2 of them are, you know, within that range. And 1 of them is outside of it. But the reason I picked that one is because it's very important for the framing of the book. And I think that it frames it very well. I'm not going to get in like a big brawl over it and tell this person that like they're wrong. I think it could have definitely gone that way if they're being insistent, but sometimes you have to look at that boilerplate stuff and go, yeah, that is true. That is definitely generally true, but you have to over time develop the skill of knowing, well, in this case though, there is an argument to be made for it. And I need to embrace that argument because it is fundamentally, it's just imperative to understanding the body of the work or what it's meant to be said in this sentence, or embracing tone and allowing some of those justs and those that's to flourish. Mm-hmm. All of that is very important. And maybe it's just about, maybe there's a journey here. You know, folks show up on the scene, they think they can write a book. They get that rude awakening of, oh, I guess I can't write a book. Look at all these rules I have to learn. You have to learn the rules and then you have to learn how to subvert them. Maybe it's just part of the journey and part of it's being patient with folks as we watch them, you know, some people more publicly than others proclaim to be experts on the rules and be rule hardliners and things like that. Maybe that's just part of what this is. But, you know, anyone who seems like they've been around the block, but is also still really clinging to that stuff, the river, that's where we need to be with them.
Yes, I definitely agree.
And I should maybe, you know, pare it back a little bit here. We're coming up on the full length of our conversation here. And I know that in the last probably 15 to 20 minutes or so in particular, I've gone as off the rails as I have ever been in a podcast episode, folks. I'm free now. Listen to me. This is what I really sound like in real life. This is what happens when you hang out with me in person. You can have a real, real tough conversation about publishing and writing and all that jazz. But I do want to say, despite maybe some of the tone I've adopted, the position I've adopted, it's not that I am spurning the writing community in general. Community's been very good to me, but I think we all recognize that it has its challenges. It has its problems. It has its characters who pop their heads up from time to time that we all wish would be booted from Twitter or whatever platform they're on altogether. But such is life, you know, such is life. Yeah. And I think that going forward and embracing some of the things that you and I have discussed here, Marianne, that are going to be empowering for you listeners, things like putting yourself first, really knowing what your mission is, making sure that you're not confusing your identity as an author with who you are as a person, those are the things that we really need to focus on. Because if you can have that as your guiding light, eventually some of the other nonsense we've been talking about for the last 15, 20 minutes, it all just fades into the background anyway. It filters itself out if you're true to yourself and true to what it is that you want to do. And Marianne, you know, before we part ways here, I do want to make sure that listeners know where it is that they can find you online. So why don't you go ahead here and let folks know, you know, website, Twitter, wherever else you are, give a shout out to it here.
Well, my website is Marianne Hinkle, the writer, just MarianneHinkle.com. My email is Marianne Hinkle, the writer, if you want to email me for some reason. It's on my website, so it's not like it's a secret. The most common place to talk to me is on Twitter, at SkySongMA. I'm not on there very much right now because I was waiting until the election was over. Because for some reason I decided that it would be a good idea to use Twitter half for writing purposes and half to follow like political analysts. So, you know, that didn't backfire at all. And I also have a Facebook page under my author name, M.A. Hinkle. Which I haven't updated since my third book came out, but that's because that was literally my third book came out in February. So that should tell you everything you need to know about how I feel about that. that's where you can find me. All three of my books are available through Nine Star Press, and Nine Star has kind of a permanent COVID sale where all the books are 40% off if you buy them through their website. So it's pretty cheap.
Good plug there for the COVID sale. I myself had forgotten about it because I am miserable at promoting my own books, mostly because I geared up for promoting all of it when I was still talking like this on the Rightscast Network. And now, you know, that I'm over here, it's all out the window. So good mention of the COVID sale. Good mention of where it is that folks can find you online. Again, here, the author is M.A. Hinkle. We got books like Death of a Bachelor, Diamond Heart, and Weight of Living. It was really good to have an opportunity to catch up with you here, Marianne, and I'm hoping that once COVID is done and gone, we can have another get-together somewhere here where I live in Wisconsin or somewhere near where you live.
Well, we'll come see you because I really want to go back to that wonderful diner that was in Stoughton, and if it's closed, I'm going to weep. I'm going to weep so much.
It's not closed yet. You're thinking of the coffee cup, and that place is a godsend. It is wonderful. It is lovely. It's been around since the early 20th century, and we're hoping it chugs on more and more into the 21st here. It's open so far, so fingers crossed for the coffee cup.
Christmas miracle. Yay.
And so concludes my conversation with M.A. Hinkle. Thank you, M.A., for joining me for that conversation, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. I'd also like to thank the Rightscast Network's patrons, including Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley, who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit rightscast.net/sponsors. We're also grateful for audio support from Electronauts, Inc. To learn more about their audio production and maintenance services, visit ElectronautsInc.com. That's ElectronautsInc.com. Coming up next on the Rightscast Network is a conversation with author Sarah Smith about writing romance and simmering down when things in the world of writing get too hot. So stay tuned for my forthcoming conversation with her, which will debut on rightscast.net, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts on November 27th. In the meantime, you can say hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Rightscast or by searching for the Rightscast Network. We're also available by email at rightscast@gmail.com. To reach me personally, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com or holler at me on Twitter as @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net.